podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, Cooles. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. And in today's episode, we review the loss at home against Real Sociedad, along with the trophy celebration. More importantly, we look at the pairing of Dembele and Rafinha, and also how do we approach these final matches. We get into those topics after our message from NordVPN. Are you tired of hackers and cybercriminals snooping around your online activities? Do you want to safely access your favorite shows and content from anywhere in the world? Then you need NordVPN, the best VPN on the market. And the good news is that there's an exclusive birthday deal just for you. Buy NordVPN now and win extra subscription time. With NordVPN, you can protect your online activity and keep your private information away from prying eyes. And if you're traveling abroad, don't worry. Connect to a NordVPN server in your home country and safely enjoy content as if you never left. So what are you waiting for? Visit nordvpn.com/Barca now to get this special birthday deal. Shield your data from snoops and criminals with NordVPN's state-of-the-art encryption. Safely listen to podcasts, stream shows, or simply browse in complete privacy. Again, visit nordvpn.com/Barca. The link is in the show notes. Get NordVPN now and enjoy a safe and private online experience. All right, Craig, happy Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, on Friday, Remy had a really good episode talking about how we want to approach these last matches. I thought that was going to be a good topic to talk about to kind of piggyback what he said, mm-hmm. especially, you know, we lose at home against Real Sociedad 2-1, kind of a volatile game of kind of performance, attack, chemistry, all the things. I mean, we're going to talk about that, but let's kind of get into the first thing, and we want to dive into a little bit of the Rafinha Dembele talk, because in our WhatsApp group during the match, it was going off the chart about this. And, you know, we've had mixed feelings through Dembele's career about him and so forth. And now we have Rafinha, who's almost kind of the same type of profile where we're still on the fence, off the fence and so forth. But I want to start off with this, Craig, because they've been playing the whole season. We are now in May, so there's no excuses of not enough games under the belt and whatnot. But every time I watch the three of them, this includes Lewandowski, I feel as though they are meeting for the first time on the pitch. What say you about that? Do you get the same feeling?
Yeah, a little. I feel like Rafinha and Lewandowski are getting a little bit closer in terms of having some symmetry in terms of thought. I think it's quite difficult, I think, to pin down what the faults are. I think it's kind of, we all know it. We all know there's a problem, but we don't quite know what that is. It's kind of, you know, when you go to a restaurant and the meal doesn't taste well, but because you didn't see it being cooked, you don't know what it could be. It feels a little bit like that just, there's just something not quite there. And I think my biggest area of concern isn't them as individuals, because I think inherently they're all talented footballers. My problem is that we're going to have to get some level of settling, or of stability might be a better word. Settling implies something different. But we need to get some stability and start playing with them. And I just don't know if you can trust Dembele to hold up enough, Rafinha to be on form enough to actually get a solid trident there. But it's frustrating because it's just not quite there, is it? It's just broken enough to not be effective.
Yeah, and I agree. It's, you know, let's break down Dembele, because, you know, these past two seasons, Dembele's played the most matches in his Barca career, and he's been a little bit more consistent. Obviously, he had injuries again this season, but he's played 22 matches, 5 goals scored, 5 assists in La Liga, about 1,200 minutes played. And I just still, I don't know, man. You get the glimpses, right? Like last night, you get the glimpses where he dribbles between 3 players, he holds it up enough, and all he has to do is just do the simple release back, and he just can't do that, you know? And it's always that kind of idea where he gives you the 2 ahs, and then you're like, oh, man, what are you doing,
yeah,
you
know?
And I'm still, after all this time, you know, we're talking what, his sixth season here at Barcelona almost. I don't know what I want from him. And mm-hmm. I want him to be more consistent, right, with the passing, holding the ball, not losing the ball. But again, I get so frustrated watching him because I don't see enough goals for me to warrant him to stay. I'm really on the fence about this. And the only reason I bring this up is because last night, you know, watching them play, the three of them, Dembele comes short, they pass long. He comes short to the right, they pass it to the left. Like, there's all this mm-hmm. kind of miscommunication. And Craig, it just seems to me as they don't practice enough, or they just don't on the same page at all. It's, every counter is a lost ball, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really frustrating. And I think there is an element, of course, that Lewandowski's new. You know, it does take time to settle. He's played one similar style of football for so long. He's also Pichichi, right? So I think Lewandowski's had a hell of a lot of stick for someone that's going to win the Pichichi. And yeah, as we discussed yesterday, you know, it's going to be the lowest, in theory, it's going to be the lowest winning Pichichi season since 2000 and 2001. But he ultimately is still objectively better than any other striker in the league this season. But I think, you know, he's going to take time to adapt. I think if I was in his shoes, or if I was his agent, or if I was banging his drum, I'd be saying, how do you expect me to get into a rhythm with players who they don't know what they're doing?
Yeah.
Like, I think Dembele second guesses himself to the point where, how can you possibly mirror that? I do think Rafinha has been a little bit more refined in the last few games. And I think his ability to cross a ball is incredible. I thought that the relationship between Rafinha and Dembele yesterday was just off. Every pass was overhit. It wasn't quite there. But I think Rafinha and Lewandowski are getting there. For me, I think Rafinha is someone we can sell, and I think on that basis I would let him go. However, if we were to keep him, I wouldn't be overly upset. I think he's been frustrating this season, but he's also shown glimpses. So I think if there's a reason that we either don't need to or can't sell him, another season will be interested. I know Graham Hunter on the UK feed yesterday was saying that he believes Rafinha is going to be a genuine superstar in the future. And, you know, who am I to argue with the great man? I don't see it myself yet, but I would back his opinion over mine, I suppose.
Yeah, well.
But I certainly have a lot more patience with Rafinha. I think Dembele yesterday showed, to your point, exactly why he frustrates me, which is that, you know, it's all well and good doing the glamour, but you ultimately need to give me an end product, and you aren't doing that. And the only thing that jumped out to me other than frustration, and that, to your point, yeah, I would get rid of him if someone wants to come and take him off us, is that the only thing we haven't really tried with Dembele is playing him as a 10. We know we need a 10. He's creative. He can beat a man. I don't trust him across a ball. Can I trust him to centrally pass the ball through 10 yards? Maybe. I wonder if he's the 10 that we're missing. I don't think he gets played there, by the way.
Okay. I like this. I like this a lot because just the aspect of his left and right foot ability, right? Mm-hmm. That he can do both. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here, we're onto something here. I like this idea better than putting him on an island on the left or the right, because now all of a sudden he can beat people 1v1, just like you said. He'll actually do it, right? He's probably maybe the only player that we have in that part that can want to do it. But on top of that, if he beats the one, then the defense collapses and he can just dish it off to Lewandowski or Rafinha. There you go. Pish, pash, posh, goal, right? Essentially. Now, again, this is part of the quote-unquote experiments that I would like to see now that we've already won the La Liga. I mean, this would be a very interesting one. I think I've never even thought of that. That is something spicy, though, Craig. I like it because, like you said, he can go up the middle. He likes to drive up the middle. He can kind of – I mean, I would say maybe the lack of distribution to the left and right is maybe the fault here, but you're trying to gain that 1v1 advantage where he can take people and make that defense scared. Yep. Really quick on Rafinha's stats, really quick. So – 33 La Liga matches played, 7 goals, 7 assists. I mean, those are pretty, you know, really respectable numbers. And, you know, let's say we don't experiment with Dembele with the 10. I'd kind of be more open to sell Dembele rather than Rafinha. Just because of the matches played, Rafinha has showed more consistency to be healthy, even though it's been his first season. I think as a person watching this team, I think I have a little bit more patience with Rafinha rather than Dembele. I've already exhausted everything with Dembele. Yeah. We've already seen, I think, the best that he can do. And I think we can get some value off of him unless we see something dazzling if he ever did play for the 10. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but would be very interesting. Again, 7 goals, 7 assists. You look at that on paper, that's a great season for any type of winger. But like I said, I feel in this season, he's just come up short in the big matches where we needed a big performance. Yeah. And also, I think, you know, I don't, Carlos in our Patreon group is going to hate this, but sometimes I just don't feel he's Brazilian enough for me. You know, he doesn't have that, you know what I'm talking about? That Brazilian flair 1v1 to take someone on. You know, it's never, I never feel when he has the 1v1 that he's going to clearly beat them, you know, like Neymar used to, right? Or Ronaldinho, that type of, you know, kind of samba dance move, 1v over, you know, Vinicius essentially as well. With Rafinha, it's just more very kind of direct two moves and go, which is fine. But again, I think in this situation, if I had to choose, I think I would sell Dembele.
Yeah, I would too. For all the reasons that you've outlined, I think, yeah, I think he's peaked at Barcelona. I think it's going to take something exceptional for him not to. I think on the Rafinha one, it's really interesting because you're saying, I don't think he's Brazilian enough. Yeah, I think his attempt to be a cliched Brazilian footballer actually makes him worse. I think the best of Rafinha is when he does a step over and crosses the ball.
Does something and shoots.
Yeah, exactly. And I think actually what he tries to do is almost regress a little bit into that cliche. And so, but again, he's a young player. And that's the other thing that strikes me about Rafinha is that it feels like there's a ceiling there that we haven't hit yet. And I feel like with Dembele that he's going to, you know, he might have a bit of an Indian summer and, you know, we'll see a flash of brilliance for a little while. But I kind of feel like he's already on the way back down a little bit. And that's really harsh because, you know, he also is still reasonably young. But, you know, I just don't see it. And I think them two, certainly, I just don't think them two can play together. I think you can carry one of them. As in a formation, I don't mean carry that they're always a burden. I mean, I think you can play one of them, but I think fundamentally it skews what we do both sides, because if you can't guarantee decent levels of production down both wings, the way we play, just, you know, we're relying on fullbacks to go and become, you know, proxy attacking forwards. And I just don't think that works. So I think Xavi's got a real dilemma on his hands with them positions, especially if we're looking to bring Messi in, or in fact, any other player that sits in that forward line, is that, you know, Can you afford to put another one in and carry the players that we have across the line minus Lewandowski? You know, I would say that genuinely minus him, every single other person is expendable. Which is that gonna happen? That we, you know, people come in and take all of these spare parts off us quickly? Probably not. Is it going to be a fire sale in the window? Probably. Therefore, how do you plan?
I mean, that's the same old story with Barcelona. Essentially, we never have a straightforward plan at the beginning where we just start making these signings at the beginning. But, you know, just really kind of just finishing off on this, on these two players, you know, I think the next step that I want to see Rafinha, he knows now what it takes to be a Barca player, the stress, the pressures. You know, we've seen him kind of unravel a couple times to getting subbed out. He definitely needs to mature because he's 26. You know, it's one thing if he was 19, you could say, okay, you know, he's a little immature there, but 26, he's been around the block now. And what I want to see for him, if he does stay at Barca for the next season, I just want some more consistency. Now, he had 7 goals, 7 assists. You know, I want to see, you know, this type of output every third game type of thing. That is where the consistency will come, because, you know, ultimately in this system of this 4-3-3, he has a lot of width, especially at the Camp Nou, where he's going to have a lot of opportunities. And he should, like, I want to see his assist up more in double digits, you know, 15, that type of thing. Because, you know, if you're an attacking player, this is the ideal situation, especially if you're a winger and cross the ball as well as Rafinha, to be able to connect on opening attackers to get those goals. So that's the thing I'm going to look for next season if he stays at Barcelona. Like I said, I think just from the health standpoint of being available, you know, that is something to being a professional. You know, you have to be available for those matches. So I would definitely lean towards Team Rafinha for that, for sure. Yeah. All right. So Remy brought up this topic, which I thought was an interesting topic on Friday, about how do we approach these games. And we both saw the Man City game this afternoon, where basically Pep, you know, emptied out the whole bench. And they were able to get a really good, strong performance to get the win. And last night we had ours, and it was kind of, you know, Pedri and Gavi didn't start. You know, we had a mix of players, but it already seems, and which kind of troubles me, because, you know, these players are still young, and I just feel like they're already on the banquet tour already, because in the first, I don't know, what, 60 minutes, they just looked as though they were going through the motions. And, you know, especially Koundé, I think Koundé needed a day off as well. We just looked at lackadaisical. And I don't know how we should approach it, because on one end, I want Xavi to experiment, try these different ideas, formations, you know, player settings and stuff. And then on the other end, I don't see Xavi doing that at all.
Yeah, and it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario for Xavi. So I think what he has to do is come up with an idea and stick with it, what he does for these next three games. I genuinely could not care if we lose 4-0 in the next three games and we've played formations that would make the eyes bleed, because he just wants to see what we can do. Whereas what I think we had yesterday was a kind of halfway house between, we'll change it a bit, but we're not really changing it a bit, because yeah, you know, we're trying a little bit different, but all we're doing is the things that we've panicked in the past and done. So yeah, putting Balde right back and stuff. I think there's an element of some players needing a rest. There's an element of some players needing to either go and prove themselves or be in the shop window. So for example, if you look at Kessié, for example, I see total logic in playing him, even though I don't believe it helps us future plan. Basically, he's got three games, in my opinion, to say, right, you're worth hanging around or we're going to try and ship you off. I think Ferran probably is someone that I'd like to see get the same mentality. But at the same time, and I think he's the easy example of it at the minute, but why is Pablo Torre not getting minutes?
Correct.
Presumably, we're not sending him anywhere. If we are, we're doing a terrible job of marketing him, unless someone's already in and said, look, do us a favor, let us take him off your hands for 2 million more than you want him. Why aren't we playing him? So what I would like to see is commit to the next three games and say, right, either we give kids a run, and Ter Stegen, I know you got your record, mate, but you don't need to play. We need to see what the other keepers can do. You say to Balde, you're a superstar. Do you know what? Go on holiday. You've picked the trophy up now. Just go on holiday. Gavi, same. Pedri, same. Go and have 3 weeks in Miami, lads. Go and watch some basketballs. Playoff season. Go enjoy yourself. But then saying to someone like Sergio Roberto, right, go and show leadership. Show leadership when you don't have these players around you. Go and show why you need to be in this squad. Everyone says you're this Swiss Army knife. Go and prove it. Say to Jordi Alba, you've got a farewell tour. Go and play. Go and show them what you can do. So I think we need to do one of those two things. What I don't think we can do, which I think will happen, is keep playing the same players that we've ran into the ground for 35 games now, and expect it not to be what we saw yesterday, which is they've hit their objectives. They've got themselves over the line. They've all played loads of minutes, and it's going to be pedestrian and boring. There's a phrase, I put it in the WhatsApp group, there's a phrase in England that only ever gets used on football podcasts, really, but it is technically a phrase. But it's like, you know, after the Lord Mayor's Parade, which basically means you have this big high and then you've got to trundle on. I think you'll see that with City in the next game. You know, today was a big event. It was a big party for them, similar to what we should have had. And I think the next one will be poor, but strange yesterday. Understandable, but just weird atmosphere. And in fairness, Saucy Dad played really well. Yeah, tell me your thoughts. I've rambled there.
Yeah, no, I guess yesterday was really a microcosm of the season, essentially. You know, like, I don't know how to gauge this team, because, you know, they put the table on last night, you know, and it was like 14 points. I'm just like, wow, like any other season, you're like, that is a walk in the park. We were clearly the best team. No questions asked. And when we look back at this season, I don't know how we got here. It's like, it's pretty crazy, because for all what we saw Real Madrid do going into the semis and so forth, like in all of that, they have just won Copa del Rey and they're 14 points behind us. And to me, it's such a weird season. And like you said earlier in the podcast, Lewandowski wins the Pichichi, or is going to, but like, I cannot remember him really scoring that many goals. You know, it's just like one of those things. It's like, so last night watching them play, you know, I expected them to kind of have that performance, especially with the mishmash of the lineup. But like you said, I think for me going forward, I want to see the young players. I want to see these players really going after it, because like you said, these are the last three matches for you to kind of put on your mixtape, you know, and show what you can do, especially like players like Ansu Fati, Ferran Torres. I want to see Pablo Torre. Like, that excites me to watch it. I do not want to see another kind of output last night where people are just kind of, you know, sleepwalking through the motions.
Yeah, and I don't think you can blame those players that have ground this out for however long. there's players that, I mean, Kessie yesterday, if that wasn't an opportunity, I don't know what was. Like, and I was thinking last night, I really rate him, but I don't know why.
Because he scored goals in weird moments and he played.
No, I don't think that's it. I'm not a player. If it was about scoring big goals in isolated moments, Sergio Roberto gets a statue next to Kubala outside.
That's not a thing that massively endears me to people.
Like Jeffrey Suarez.
I was going to say more about this season in particular, where, you know, he kind of grew into his role to kind of come in when players were injured, especially Pedri, did well and scored big goals. And I think in that kind of cluster against Madrid.
I feel like that's how I saw it. But then I was thinking about it last night, thinking, but did he though? Like, if I go back and I do a review, am I going to be shocked by going, he wasn't actually as good as I thought he was? Just because I was swept up and we were grinding these results out. And I think there's a few players that I think when we look back, when it's all said and done, and we go back and review highlights when we're bored and there's no football on, we'll be like, actually, they either had a better or worse season than I thought. Like, to me, Koundé has been pretty average this season, but then he's been played out of position a lot. And I'll probably go back and say, minus yesterday, I probably go, actually, I was really harsh to you or whatever. I'm not sure, but I found yesterday strange. And I think there'll be some players like Ansu Fati, for example, that the club clearly want rid of. So I wouldn't play him because if he gets injured, his value plummets, we're probably done. But some players, I think you just have to give them a run. And I just think we need to see a little bit more of that from Xavi. Be a bit adventurous. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think when he first came in and he was like, you've got to play a certain way. And then he became pragmatic and won, right? And I'd rather we won. Surely now is the time to say, right, I needed to get this league won. You're welcome. Now I'm going to go and play attacking football. And if we lose 5-1, que sera. We've gone and played well. And I want to see that because the pressure's off now.
Yeah, for sure. But again, just looking back at this season and, you know, this idea of attacking football, you know, I just can't remember the last time where we full throttled, we're just dancing around, you know, going shot after shot and having a good time. And you know what I'm talking about? Like, you know, when you played 100%. and you had those matches where you won 5-0, you dominated, you were having so much fun. You had so many shots. You should have had a hat trick here. And this, it's like, that hasn't happened in such a long time with this team. And I don't know if it's just like, this is what I want to see, those experiments, because try it out, you know, try these things out. You know, we were kind of joking in the WhatsApp group. It's like, I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to add a little bit more water to the pancake matter. Oh my God. Wow.
That's it. And like this season has been a really necessary title win. Like, let's not lose sight of that fact.
I totally agree.
But like my little boy, I put this again in the WhatsApp group, and it's the happiest day of my life. My boy Society likes football. I think he's convincing himself rather than he actually does like it. But this has been a tough season to try and introduce a child to football, because you're like, come and watch this ground out 1-0 win. Now, don't get me wrong, I'd rather we were winning 1-0 than getting beat 2-1 and not winning the league, because we need to. We've got no choice. But if you were asking me this season, if I was fresh to football, wiped my memory, Gilderoy Lockhart in Harry Potter 2, and I've just life is new to me again, I'd probably rather be a Girona fan this season than Barca. And they've been pragmatic and exciting. So it's not like they've gone, you know, Rio of the past and got trounced every week. And so this is the quandary Xavi's got for next season. We're jumping ahead here, but this is the quandary he's got for next season, which is I don't think he is allowed to ride another season winning the league 1-0.
You don't think so? I think he is.
I don't.
Especially, no, you know,
within the club, I think he is. But I think the noise from fans and media will very quickly go, my God, this is boring. Like, I think the club need him to keep winning, 100%. We need to start playing better. And I think, to the point that Troy has made a lot this season, which is a completely valid point, which is we need to get more kids on. You're not doing that at 1-0. Therefore, if we're going to start breeding these people, these people through for generations, we need to play more expansive football. If we're going to start getting people back to believing that we could do something bigger and start fearing us again, because there is an element of psychology in football, we've got to go and start playing expansive football in our style again. Like, we can't go and beat these teams at their own game. Eventually, it's going to run out. And so I think we need that from Xavi next season. We need more expansion. We need to see more exciting football, especially if we're going to get dragged up the hill to Montjuic and it's going to be pissing down and cold and open and dark and dull. Like,
and less crowd. Can't let it be
less crowd, exactly. We can't let it be one of those seasons. Like, it already feels like it could be a forgotten season. He needs to go and make it a memorable season.
I mean, those are good points. And this goes back to my thing of just, he needs to coach, you know, because they're not going to be able to bring all the players that you see in the rumor. So you're going to have to try to improve these players by 5 to 10% in this offseason. And we, you know, I remember last season, the rhetoric was, oh, you know, he just needs the offseason. He needs the offseason. All right. Well, now, you know, he's won La Liga. Kudos. Obviously, like you said, we needed the La Liga. But now this is where the pressure comes, right? Everyone is gunning for us now, the next season. Now, with all the pressures, can he improve on the Champions League performance as well? Because that is money that we desperately need as well. So all these new pressures, you know, that he hasn't experienced as a coach are going to come into play. And so, you know, we talked about this offseason is really tricky and how he's going to approach these last matches. But again, you know, there's no time for to rest because the next match is Tuesday.
Did you just one point there, sorry, in terms of what we're doing. Did you find it? I thought Xavi's speech was was about as uninspiring as it could have been, which was a slight letdown, I suppose.
Would you have ever bet that Busquets was going to have better speech than Xavi?
Not until about 15 seconds into Xavi's speech, I wouldn't have done, no.
I know. Like on paper, I would have said, wow, Busquets, like I've never seen it. Obviously, I understand why. Not as personable. Yeah. He was in the crowd doing all the things. And then Xavi's like, meh, meh, meh. You know, you're like,
yeah,
oh,
Xavi's like, cheers, everyone. Yeah. thanks for coming by. But ultimately, we pay him to be Laporta, could be the clown. We pay Xavi to win games, right? But anyway, on Busquets, I was going to say, sorry, did you think it was interesting? Because it's easy to throw out these trite cliches and these speeches, and Pep's a master of it, man. Just say stuff like, you know, it's impossible, we can't replace Kun Aguero. It's like, you've signed Haaland, man. Like, don't worry about it. But did you find it interesting that Busquets explicitly said, this is the beginning? Did you find those choice of words cliche, or did you find them interesting?
Cliche.
I am not sure, because if I look at it, right, this could be classic Craig convincing myself, right? But if I look at it, if you look at the base of the team that we, and we've said this a lot this season, if you look at the base of the team that we've got, Ter Stegen's still got a lot of legs to run, being a keeper. If you look at the core seven bodies in that team, there's 10 years worth of greatness potentially there.
I know. I mean,
and that's what keeps me going. You're only a few parts away. And I thought his choice of words, he could have said lots of different things. And the fact he chose to say that, I found inspiring. Maybe that's a bit much, but it certainly gave me nice sensations, to coin a Spanglish phrase.
I like that, but I would only say my opinion could definitely change all on this offseason, because this offseason will tell me how this is going to be structured as a club, right? Are we going to just grab free agents just to, as we did this season, just to try to make Champions League and do that? Or are we having a plan and structurally trying to build the youth and just build those pieces around and being financially stable, right? Those are things. Now, if we start to do that and we win La Liga next year, or we have another great run of something next year, then I would definitely say yes. But I think it's too early to say that. I understand why he's saying that. I mean, he wants to inspire and do all that stuff. But also, I from my point of view right now, I find it a little cliche. But again, I'm open to change my mind. You know, especially coming from this offseason, we'll see what happens, especially, you know, with all the news of Alemani staying. First of all, with Alemani, is there another person on this face of the earth that hates doing TV interviews than Alemani? I mean, he just truts in there and he, like, they ask him questions and it's like he never wants to answer anything. It's like, why do you even go on TV? Like, I don't know what your deal. But anyway, so I'm glad he's staying, because that brings stability to this project. And as Troy has mentioned that, about Alemani's ideas and the players that he's looking for and the financially responsible players that he wants to go after, I believe he is the right man for the job for what we need right now. Now, again, it's all going to, you know, come out this offseason when we get all the player signings in our final roster. But, you know, I think, yes, I would just echo this. We do have the youth. I mean, we talked about last night in our WhatsApp group is that Balde's playing right back. What? Like, I mean, it's still incredible, because when you think of other teams and their right back is injured, they're going to submit a right back. You know, they don't just shift as easily as we have. And so, yes, we do have potential of 8 to 10 years of greatness. But again, right, sign Araujo, sign Gavi, and then
we can talk 100%.
About those things, right?
100%.
That's what that's why I just keep echoing. When we sign Araujo and Gavi, then I'm going to be really excited about what comes after that, because those two are the most vital, most important signings that we need. And then I'll start to listen to all the rumors and maybe fantasizing about Kimmich and all this stuff. But first, it has to be Araujo and Gavi. When those players get signed, then you can start listening to the noise a little bit stronger. But again, those two players are the most vital because they are the foundation of this project.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should probably just throw out there that Kimmich isn't happening. So
I know. I just accept that. I mean, any player that's more than 30 mil in a transfer, like, that is such a hard, we're not going to be able to bring anyone in.
It's not happening, but it'll be interesting to see when the summer moves start, actually. And I think, to Busquets' point, I think when we see some of the old guard move or some of the dead wood move,
Jordi Alba,
that's when I'll start to think it's a beginning. So I think Jordi Alba's the first chess piece that has to fall, surely. I think there's a few other people that I would file under Deadwood. Marcus Alonso, the world's youngest, oldest man.
You know what? I don't mind Marcus Alonso because he's on a friendlier contract and he only has one season. So that's the thing. For me, the biggest dead weight right now is Jordi Alba. I think he's more toxic in the locker room. I think we need to get rid of his voice out of there for him not to be a captain. And also, more importantly, to get his 30 mil off the books. That to me is the biggest dead weight. If we can get rid of him, I'm going to be over the moon. That's like the hugest success of an offseason because of the player. And I believe the toxicity that he has in the locker room. I just think we just need to ditch that and not have that option at left back. Right. I think Balde is obviously going forward is the future, but just like last night, when I watched Alba last night, I just get so irritated about him all the time. And obviously, I know it's turned in the last 3 years. When he first came, it was love. I was loving Alba. Obviously, he was one of the best left backs in the world. But just his this recent run and stuff, we need him, his contract out the door. I mean, that just
on paper, Jordi Alba is a seasoned professional that knows the club and that can inspire the young people. In reality, that's not that. I actually think you get more of that from Sergio Roberto because you get less of the hassle.
Correct.
You don't get any less productivity, I would argue. So I would agree, and it's kind of a bit like Gary Neville's last season, where you can just see that he's done, minus the fact that Gary Neville walked off into the sunset without costing Man United, you know, the earth. But I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting. One last point to me on this season, right? Well, obviously not one last point on the season, but one last point, because we've got the celebration and stuff yesterday. It left a very weird feeling for me. Like, I don't know if you listen to the Spanish football podcast, said Lord and Phil really as much, but they were talking about how they, you know, objectively they feel like title wins mean less to Barca and Madrid than any other club, and they'd like to see other clubs win it more just because it would mean more. And it's impossible to argue against that. Like, can you imagine if Villarreal done it this season if Girona ever got it, ever? So I completely agree. But yesterday left a strange feeling for me. Like, I almost felt relief that we'd won, and it was almost like, it was almost like winning £1,000 on a scratch card. And it's like, I haven't changed my life, but I know that I can pay my rent easier this month. So today is a good day. I'm not overjoyed. I'm not going to go and sprint down the street, but happy days. This is good. And it left me with a really weird feeling. So my point to myself last night while I was trying to sleep was, would I rather have another season next season like this, where we lift the title and I feel like I do now, which is 60% of it was successful? Or would I rather finish second, but we've played amazing football, loads of young kids? And I don't know, man, because the finances mean we have to win, but I don't know. Like, this is the least enjoyable title win we've ever had. Maybe the least enjoyable season we've had without it being a complete crisis, in my opinion.
I mean, the American me is always titles, baby, you know? So but I understand the football philosophy that you're saying, because that is bullet point number one or two is why we're Barca fans, is the style and the way we play. And so, yeah, there's definitely a contrast in that, because on one hand, you know, it's scoreboard, right? It's another La Liga title, which, you know, like I like the analogy, because, you know, we want it, but at the same time, think about how many we've won since 2005, you know, it's become second nature to us, right? You know, I was watching the Arsenal Nottingham Forest, and Nottingham Forest, you know, avoided relegation, and they look like they had won the first title in 15 years, right? And again, that is the, you know, the differences of clubs in Europe, obviously, of being giants and minnows, right? And again, to your point, I mean, I always point to the title because championships are always great, but yeah, it is a difficult pill to swallow because again, if next season we don't see another improvement and we're pragmatic and we win La Liga, what does that tell us? Are we starting to lose the beautiful art identity that makes us Barca, you know? And again, you know, if you look at the thing, he's going to be able to, let's say if Xavi wins next season another La Liga title, that's 2 and 3, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, but it's not beautiful, but yeah, winning is important, you know, and like, you know, for the money. It is an interesting philosophy because other teams wouldn't have this type of conversation, right?
No.
Other teams would be like, we won, we're great, we're number one, baby, let's go, you know, and that'd be fine. Yeah. But that is definitely the dichotomy of, you know, why we're Kool-Aids and so forth.
Yeah, and how arrogant to have this conversation, right? I'm completely aware of what I'm saying, that, you know, I'm almost quibbling over a title win, and I'm saying that it left me feeling a little bit flat yesterday still. Like, it almost felt a little bit forced, the celebration yesterday.
Yeah, I can see that. I think also weekend before at Espanyol with the whole fiasco there, I think also
that felt that, like the win, that, didn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of pushed it over. You know, you mentioned about the Spanish football podcast about saying other teams win. Again, this is why I'm such a big proponent of a hard salary cap, because to have a minimum salary cap, as we've always talked, and a max salary cap, because then you can't just buy talent, right? Yeah. You have to be savvy in a way of getting talent, promoting your youth. And obviously it's going to promote more, you know, like in the NFL, as we see, your team the following season really, truly has hope to win the Super Bowl because of attrition and these type of things. I would love to see that in La Liga football as it once was in the early 2000s, you know, where we saw teams like Deportivo de La Coruña win La Liga. Yeah. I mean, we'll never see that again.
No, I agree. And you're 100%, like, unless you're the Chicago Bears, you've got a chance of winning every year. sorry, I just had to get that in. Sorry, not sorry. Anyone who's a Bears fan. But, you know, I genuinely agree. Like, the monopoly of big clubs, despite the fact that we are one of the biggest.
Sure.
It's like, relegation battles are always more fun. Like, again, a point that Sid Lowe makes a lot is that jeopardy is more exciting than success, which is, you know, inherently true, I think, as well. So I wouldn't be against it. The other thing is that, you know, put some more rules around getting players through your systems, through your academies. Like, why is it that the Champions League has this homegrown players rule, which is nonsense, by the way, because you just sign, like Celtic, for example, just re-sign a goalkeeper that hasn't played a game in two seasons just because he's Scottish. Like, Richard Wright did it for City for a while. Now it's Scott Carson. Like, there's ways and means of getting around this. You know, everyone's got their ways, but, you know, there's got to be more exciting football out there than we're seeing at the minute, with City walking it. Madrid's last few years of domination. Obviously, we'll see what happens with us. Bayern dominating for the last few years. There has to be a better way.
I think, just to kind of close on that, you know, I think if they did some sort of like salary percentage cut, if you promote within, to kind of give you the benefit to like promote in that way, I think that would go a long way. And the other thing too, is I think, just going back to what we were saying, if we did win in an amazing style, scoring a lot of goals, I don't think we're having this idea of, you know, it was just another La Liga title, because then all of a sudden we played with the style, we played with ferocity, we played with attacking style that we love to see, you know? I mean, again, I'm always on TikTok, and of course I'm on the FC Barcelona algorithm, and sometimes I'll just see, I was watching old Messi from 2008, and I was just like, what the hell? I was just,
that's it. Like, you know, if we get around to doing a kind of like an archive of the season, and you say, right, tell me your favorite game or favorite moment for the season.
Exactly. That's the thing, you know? that's why I put it to our Patreon community, because when I think about this, I just think about the first thing I think about is our elimination from Champions League. It's not a happy thought. It's the elimination of Champions League for the first time in the round of, you know, at the beginning of the qualifying rounds. And so when I look back, it's like, okay, we almost had a chance at Copa del Rey. Great. We won La Liga. Now I'm starting to look back. But like, tell me the Benzema match, Craig. Tell me the Benzema match this season.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's it. Like, that's it. Minus, I can tell you players that have smashed it this year. We'll name a few of them, but that's it. And I think it's those things that are making this feel a very weird celebration. And yesterday feel a bit forced, is that the highlight reel was minimal.
Yeah. Shutouts. We still won, right? I know.
Let's end on a positive note. We won the league. First one in a few years.
Just going back to finish that point, I think what happened at Espanyol has kind of tainted that. I think the long, you know, with the ultras and all that stuff, I think that ultimately happened. Anyway, we are La Liga champions. There's another match on Tuesday night. Like I said, it's at Valladolid at 10 o'clock, an early night here in Spain. Just kidding. Again, 10 o'clock kickoff. That's even for me, I'm a late owl.
Crazy.
That's still way too late. But anyway, we have Valladolid on Tuesday and then Mallorca on Sunday, then Celta Vigo to finish off on June 4th. So we're closing the season. We have some exciting things in store. We're going to do a yearbook. I don't know. We're still talking about the topics of what we're going to do, but we're looking forward to that. And then the summer's upon us. Well, we're going to take a look at some of those transfers who will not record as much, but we'll still have content as well. Craig, thanks for joining me. I know it's Sunday night. It's time. It's late for you over there, isn't it? It's like 10 o'clock over there.
It's 9 o'clock and I'm not a night owl anymore, unfortunately. So yeah, I've got a cup of tea and bed is calling me.
Next episode is Wednesday. Troy will have a review of the match of Valladolid. Until then, Forza Barça.
Sports Social Podcast Network.